So this morning I'd like to give a talk about effort and effortlessness. Primarily the focus is going on effortlessness, but the two go together, and it's very important in the Buddhist practice not to think of the two as being exclusive of each other. They can coexist. There can be both effort and a sense of effortlessness at the same time. Sometimes there's a term coined called effortless effort. But there can also be effortful effort coexisting with effortless effort. And I think Buddhist practice requires a lot of effort, for sure. We want to make sure that's said up front. But it also has a very important quality or aspect of it that needs to be effortless or can be effortless. And the two need to coexist in some way. And part of the negotiation of practice, anybody who practices meditation, are people hearing okay? It's okay today? Okay. Part of doing a Buddhist practice, meditation practice, or practice anywhere else in Buddhism, a regular checking in and negotiating and working out the proper level of effort to apply. And I think of it as a pendulum that we probably very seldom get the perfect balance of effort, but that part of what practice is swinging back and forth, and hopefully the swings are not so big. But we find our way. Sometimes we have to make more effort, sometimes less. If we're tired, we have to make more effort. If we're alert, maybe we have to make less. So, for example, people who might live a busy life, it might take a lot of effort, maybe heroic effort for some of you, to arrange your life so you can go on a meditation retreat. And a lot of people who go on meditation retreats are exhausted the first day. And one of the reasons sometimes is that they have to work, they're already overworked and over busy. Then they have to be even more busy to get ready to go. Until finally they get there and they're exhausted. And so for some people, meditation retreat is a time to recover from the over-efforting that maybe goes into, you know, months and months or years of effort. But sometimes it takes effort to come on retreat. Sometimes I think it takes effort to show up on the cushion. You know, if you meditate in the morning, it takes some effort to do that. And it's not uncommon for people living lay working lives to be challenged to make the time to be able to sit every day, to meditate every day. So it takes a certain kind of effort to discipline to do that. And at the same time, once you get on the cushion, once you get on the retreat, and spend all that effort doing it, then there's times when it's appropriate to let go of effort, not make so much effort. But even sometimes on retreat, on meditation on the cushion, there's a lot of effort. I remember one notable teaching by an American teacher named Shinzen Young, a wonderful teacher, and he once said, sometimes a successful meditation is defined by the fact that you didn't get up to leave it. Because sometimes, sit down, you know, meditation, you bring to meditation what's your life is about, what's going on in your life. And sometimes a person can be quite agitated for whatever reason. And sometimes sitting down to meditate is like being on the rodeo. And the success in rodeo is you didn't get thrown off. So sometimes meditation, what's successful meditation is not getting thrown off your cushion. The fact that you stuck it out, that's successful. And people don't think of meditation as being successful that way. Some people think, well, I didn't get calm. But the point is to be present for your life as it is. And if that's how your life is at that time, it's a really important thing. And you might have to break into a sweat to stay there. You know, if you're really restless or impatient or whatever, it takes a lot of effort. And then in other times, it might be that you realize that you're making too much effort in your meditation practice. You're trying and striving and pushing and trying to make something happen. And you're just kind of tying yourself in knots and giving yourself a headache. I've given myself headaches in meditation by trying too much. And so there are times in my meditation practice when the name of the game was just let go of effort. Don't make any effort whatsoever. And I had to be very, I had to make a lot of effort in order to notice that I was making all kinds of effort. Effort to solve problems in my head, efforts to try to get something out of my meditation, efforts to avoid something happening I didn't think should be happening. You know, all kinds of things I was always kind of doing. And so I had to pay a lot of effort to give up all those extra efforts until the effort to be vigilant like that was the last effort, and then I can let go of that. And then there was more of an effortless quality. Part of the problem with making effort is that efforting is a magnet for many of the ideas we have around what we should do in our lives. It's a magnet for our desires, our attachments. It's a magnet for our aversions. It's a magnet for our fears and our anxieties. And so our efforts are infused with those qualities. They can be infused with those qualities. And certainly Buddhist practice can be infused with that as well. Some people who have come to practice are coming because they suffer and they really want to get rid of something. But sometimes that they're very anxious about something. Or they really want to get enlightened. They want something really strongly. And so desire, hate, and fear are very, very powerful sources of suffering in our lives. And if they get infused with our efforting, the efforting can be off. Little bit off, big time off. And so effort sometimes comes along with these, with all this extra stuff. It's a magnet for this extra stuff. Effort can also be a magnet for a lot of beliefs, shoulds. I am supposed to get something. I'm supposed to attain something. I'm supposed to not be something. I have to push something away. I have to repress something. All this supposed to can operate in meditation. And those supposed to can get in the way of what actually is here, connecting more fully. Here's a quote from Suzuki Roshi. If you try to listen to something wonderful, it means ignoring the bird that we are listening to now. When you think Buddha said something wonderful and I must find out what he meant, then your mind is directed toward Buddha's words and you don't hear the birds. So always we sacrifice actual reality because we stick to something. And we stick to something that looks like it is very good but is not so good. If we have this kind of attitude when we listen to words or even teachings, we will lose our life. And maybe our whole life will be sacrificed because of some special teaching. So our way is rather to enjoy our life right now without sacrificing. This is a kind of desire that human beings have. To some extent, desires we have are good, but if we are enslaved by desires, we lose our whole being. So here he says, if there's this ordinary reality of birds, maybe whatever's happening at the moment, in this situation he's talking about, the birds are singing outside, or whatever. And then we get into our idea, and I'm supposed to be doing this great, important Buddhist meditation practice that gets me to nirvana quickly, get to this big should, get calm, attain the great non-dual, whatever it might be. And in orienting ourselves to the should and towards something, it's easy to lose touch with the simplicity of what's happening here and now, and also the enjoyment of what's happening here and now. And he uses a very kind of dramatic language that in doing that, you could actually lose your life. You have some valuable lived life that we can all experience. So effort can be a magnet, doesn't have to be, but it can be a magnet to attachments, clinging, aversion, fears. It could be a magnet to shoulds, beliefs that we have, beliefs we connected. And it could also be a magnet to our sense of self, our self-identity. I'm the one who's making the effort. And so all the emotions and beliefs we have about me, myself, and I come into play around the efforting. I'm supposed to do a good effort. I'm supposed to be successful. Or I can't do this kind of thing. It's too hard. I'll kind of put, put my two cents in a little bit and make some effort here, but, you know, I can't really, I'm not the kind of attainment kind of person. I can't, or I'm not really, you know, I can't do it very well. And so there's all these ideas about self that come into play to interfere with the flow of effort. Now, I think effort, making effort, is really a beautiful quality of human being. And there's plenty of times that I've really enjoyed the effort that I make in things. And probably for some people, a place where effort is really enjoyable, perhaps, is in, by definition, I guess, would be in play. And I guess you're not playing if you're not enjoying it. And play usually takes effort. And so there's plenty of activities where we enjoy the effort we make. And there's a kind of effort, that kind of enjoyment that comes when we kind of get so involved in the effort, we lose ourselves. The self-consciousness or self-identity issues fall away because we're so involved in what we're doing. We're not self-conscious about what we're doing. It's a beautiful quality. And so part of the problem with effort is not inherent in effort, but is the way that effort can be a magnet for a lot of things which are painful. Another problem with making effort is that by making conscious, willful effort, we can actually interfere with a natural process, perhaps, we can perhaps tentatively call a natural process, which can unfold best when we don't interfere. So, you know, if you have a wound, if you have a cut on your skin, the best thing to do is to clean it and cover it, maybe, and then leave it alone. If you pick on it, it doesn't heal. My 9-year-old son hasn't quite learned this sometimes. And came up to me last night, I think, said, "Oh, my ear is bleeding." And I thought, "Oh, no." You know, my first thought was, "Oh, no." Well, his ear is bleeding. But he had an insect bite that has a little scab, and he's been picking on it. You know, he doesn't leave it alone. Some things are heal best, unfold best, if you don't interfere. And so part of meditation practice is learning not to interfere with something. If you make the wrong kind of effort, or sometimes making effort at all, is a kind of interference for something that can happen best without our interference. The Japanese Zen master poet Ikkyu wrote, "Break open a cherry tree and there are no flowers. But the spring breeze brings forth myriad blossoms." So, winter time, you have a cherry tree, get your axe out to find those flowers. Force them out. It doesn't work. There has to be, you can't interfere, you can't force the issue. It's not something you can force. You can allow the spring breeze, the natural forces, kind of unfold in their own way. You can't plant a seed and then pull the plant out of the ground to see how it's going and then put it back in again. You have to leave it alone. You can't interfere. You have to support it. For me, a beautiful statement someone made many years ago about, I don't think it was actually true. It was used as a metaphor, but maybe it was true. The person was witnessing a butterfly trying to free itself from its cocoon. And so the compassionate person came over to pull the filaments away, gently away, so that the butterfly could get free, not realizing that in order to have the wings strong enough to fly, it had to push against the cocoon. And so if you free up the cocoon for the butterfly, it's not strong enough and it can't fly. So that was the metaphor. I mean, I don't know how true it is, but that was the metaphor that was being given. So sometimes in life, you also need to leave people alone to struggle, because it's in the struggle that they'll get strong enough, or yourself as well. So the idea of effortless effort, the idea of getting out of the way, of allowing something to unfold within us. And I think a spiritual life, or a Buddhist practice life, or say a different way, if you don't like those words, I believe that there is deep inner, psychological perhaps, spiritual, movements of healing, of unfolding, of growth that are inherent in our psychophysical system, and that we don't have to be in charge of that growth or that healing. What we have to do is we have to create the right conditions so that inner movement can happen. If we're always running around living a willful life, a life of doing and accomplishing even spiritual things, then perhaps you're not giving any room, space, or time to a natural inherent process that is there waiting to unfold if it's given half the chance. And I hope that most of you who have some meditation experience have seen this operate in meditation, that even meditating for 45 minutes, that even just right there, there can be an unfoldment that has its own natural process that wouldn't have happened unless you had stopped to do nothing at all. For example, you might not realize how tense you are going around in life until you sat down to meditate. And somehow the meditation, by the kind of way mindfulness and self-awareness that comes with meditation, begins to reveal to you the tension you're holding in your body. And sometimes the tension, if you sit long enough, is not surface tension that you can easily be aware of if you sat in a chair, went for a walk, and just paid attention just in a normal way. There has to be this very careful attention of mindfulness, very kind of sense of being present, that you discover the deeper tensions. And as those deeper tensions come out, they have a chance to sometimes to resolve themselves, to dissolve themselves, and relax. Same thing psychologically. There are psychological patterns, beliefs, motivations, impulses that are not necessarily so obvious on the surface as we go about our life. But if you sit down and be still long enough, then you can they're revealed. They show themselves to us. And it's not uncommon for some people who do mindfulness practice or sometimes therapy or different things to suddenly have an aha moment when they realize, oh, I had no idea how pervasive a certain belief was in my life, how pervasive a certain emotion was in my life. I didn't know that I was so, that fear was always there lurking in the background, kind of influencing everything I do. Or I had no idea there was a belief that life is a dangerous place and I have to always be on my guard. I had no idea how pervasive that belief was always there. It's probably been there for decades, and I hadn't really known it. But it's there in everything I do, even the way I move my eyes. The idea that life is a dangerous place is there in the eye movements as you look around a little bit more carefully. So there can be, but those things, the revealing, discovery of bringing into awareness of fear or bringing into awareness a belief system is the beginning of allowing it to relax and to kind of dissolve. And so a lot of this stuff wants to dissolve by itself. A lot of this stuff, here, that's its natural movement, is towards peace. And it takes effort to be afraid. It takes effort to be angry. It takes effort to be jealous. It takes effort to be self-critical. It takes effort to hold a belief, to keep a belief going in our mind. And effort is tiring. And the natural movement of anything that's effortful is that takes effort is to want to kind of release that effort and go to rest, go to peace. I don't know if I told it here to you, but I visited someone recently who was dying. And he was quite advanced along his death, but in the weeks preceding his death, he was actually quite anxious, very disturbed. And when I saw him, he was very, very weak, I guess, and very close to dying. And I went to see him and was there briefly with him. But when I was introduced to him, he immediately got really agitated. And I didn't take it personally that, you know, that I made him agitated. But I think that somehow when some new person comes into the room, you know, most of us, if a new person's come into your room, you kind of wake up a little bit. It's kind of, who's that? You know, what's going on? And then maybe after a while, you go back, become relaxed again. So in the same way, he got energized a little bit by my arrival. And in being energized, he had energies. which he didn't have much of, but he had energy, and that energy went channeled back into his anxiety, his agitation. And you could, and the people had to come and kind of put their hands on him and relax him, and then he relaxed. And I had this very strong sense as I tuned into him that he was actually relatively at peace. He didn't have the inner wisdom or the ability to stay at peace if he had enough energy. But he didn't have much energy because he was, you know, basically about to go, and very weak. And so I felt kind of happy for him. It was unfortunate how he had been over the last weeks, but I felt, oh, he's come to some kind of peace. Now the job is, don't energize him. You know, he's not going to be energized enough to work through anything. Just let him go. Just go stay in that peaceful place. It takes energy to be agitated. It takes energy to worry. Isn't that good news? It's good news because if with the right kind of attention, you could, the system, and that kind of letting go, or like kind of not interfering, or not feeding the system, that energy, that effort will naturally dissipate and fall away by itself. So many people find that meditation, for example, meditation on the breath, is very relaxing. Just focus on the breath. It's not that maybe it's relaxing in and of itself, but the more we put our attention into the breath, the more the food of attention is not available to perpetuate and feed and continue the agitation or the fear or the preoccupations we might have. So it's very interesting, I think very important to realize the degree to which our involvement with activities of the mind, thinking, emotions, often feeds it and keeps it going. And so I like to differentiate between thinking, which is an English word, and thoughting, which is now an English word. Thoughting is what the mind does. The mind thoughts. English is such a great language. You can make up these words. So the mind thoughts. But thinking is when we connect the thoughts together. So a simple thought arises. That was the sound of a car that went by. Just a simple thought. But then thinking is, I wonder what kind of car that is. I have kind of an old car at home. I think it'd be nice to have a new car. But, you know, there's a problem with that. And I never know what to get. And there's a problem of money. And, you know, why do I have this job that never gives me any money? And oh, you know, and I never get a good job. And I haven't had a good job since I was, you know, a kid. And it's those parents of mine. They just didn't set me up properly in my life. And so, you know, it started just the sound of a car, right? A thought, oh. And then the thinking begins, the associated thinking, the, you know, building on that. And so thoughting is a natural thing. Thinking is our involvement with it. And sometimes by our engagement in those thoughts, we feed them. And they can be self-perpetuating. You know, they've been looking for a self-perpetuating machine for decades, centuries. And they were always looking in the wrong place. The only self-perpetuating thing I know of is the thinking mind. It seems to just go on and on and on. Not really, but it gets fed. And so part of meditation practice is learning not to feed it so that these things can kind of come to rest. Emotions as well. Emotions can be perpetuated because we keep getting involved. We feel justified, feels important. There are many ways to get involved. So, is your life diminished by letting go of that involvement? Is your life diminished by not continually thinking out your life, figuring out things through thinking? Or is your life diminished by not perpetuating a particular emotional response and reaction that you might have? And I think some people don't want to let go of these things because they feel like there'll be less of them. But what I like to say is that just like the flowers don't bloom unless you let go of it, you know, don't interfere, don't cut it open, the tree. It's a natural process. So there's something very beautiful and natural that can unfold within us here if we just give it half a chance. And if you've done some meditation practice, I hope you know this. If you go on retreat, you'll know it really well, I believe. that longer retreat where you kind of have long periods of silence, long periods where you're not engaged in a lot of ordinary activities, and you just have a, give a chance for the heart, the inner psychology of the mind, to begin this process of unfolding, evolving, growing, releasing, healing, that can happen if we just kind of get out of the way. So for some people find that it's a very, very important part of meditation practice is getting out of their own way and allowing there's something to happen. Now, getting out of the way and allowing something to happen has to be done, or I don't know, has to be, it's a strong word, but in the world of meditation, it doesn't mean that you get out of the way and don't pay attention. The trick is to be present to what is, to hold it in awareness, and then be out of it, get out of its way. So there's something that happens when something is in the field of awareness, where the field of awareness gives something the best opportunities to unfold, evolve, move in the direction it needs to move. So I think of awareness. When you're really aware of something, it's kind of like you finally release the spring so that the spring can unwind. Or when you hold something in awareness and not interfere with it, not be for or against it, don't judge it as good or bad, don't try to fix it, don't try to hold on to it, just allow it to be there and floating in this sky of awareness. So you know it's there, you're attentive to it, but you're just kind of there in a very spacious, open way. It's kind of like, for certain things, it's kind of like pulling the plug on a full bathtub, and then the water will drain. So our tensions, our stress will drain, things will go away. And as these things drain away, it gives space for something new to arrive, to arise. And so I've found, for example, I've been surprised when it first started happening, that as my attachments and my preoccupations settled away, how much peace and how much love and how much compassion and how much joy can bubble up. So, and that's not the diminishing of self, of ourselves, that's kind of a growth or enhancement. And what I find, you know, I still, to this day, find really remarkable is the way that somehow there can be peace, sense of well-being, joy, for no good reason. You know, often we want a reason to be happy or joyful. So we're going out trying to find reasons or things to kind of make us happy. You know, arrange things so that just right so we can be happy. And one of the things you can learn from meditation is how to be happy for not without any reason. And for some people, that's a really strange idea, foreign idea, because they've never tasted it, never had that experience. But you let go enough, and there's a way in which there's an inner radiance begins bubbling up. That is joyful and it's happy. And it's just kind of just there, as opposed to there because of a reason. Something stimulated or caused it, or, you know, you haven't won the lottery, you know. So, effortless, to get out of the way, to have some quality of not making effort, or making the effort not to interfere. So then I want to take this talk one more level, one more place of effortlessness. So maybe this way, with an exercise for you. If I instruct you all right now to stop paying attention, stop being aware of anything. Come on, stop. You know, none of you would listen. Or you listen, but you know you could accomplish this. It's not something you can accomplish unless you all went to sleep. Awareness doesn't stop very easily. You can stop paying attention to me. You can tune me out. That's easily done. But you can't stop paying attention. There is a kind of way we stop paying attention if you get lost in your thoughts. Some people come out after a long time. But generally, the system is already, you're always paying attention to some degree. So since that's, if we take that as a given, the next step of the exercise is just kind of relax for a moment. Just take a deep breath. If you want, you can close your eyes. Don't have to. Just a little bit. Try to just be calm and relaxed. And then notice what you can be aware of, what comes into awareness that requires absolutely no effort to be aware of. There might be things that come into awareness that require effort. That's okay. Let those be. You can make all the effort you want. But the exercise is to notice what comes into awareness that requires no effort at all. Now, if you kind of lean your mind, that place of effortless awareness, there's no shoulds, nothing you have to listen to, or hear, or be aware of. But what if you kind of hang there, with a river, kind of like a stream, a flow, of the things that come to awareness that are effortless? What are you aware of? Stay there with what comes to your awareness effortlessly. Okay, so now make effort to listen to me. So, did some of you have a little taste of things that could be you can be aware of without any effort? Or does awareness always require effort? There are some things? Yeah? I need to have some nods. Or, you know, some, or shakes the heads. One way of practicing when the mind is not too agitated, when you can do it, is to start tuning in meditation is a good place to begin, but to whatever comes into awareness that's effortless. So this doesn't require any effort. A certain kind of effort is needed, but it's not an effort to make anything happen. It's not an effort to focus on anything in particular or to choose anything particular to pay attention to, but rather to be kind of relaxed and to stay with the stream, the flow of things that arise effortlessly. It might be the sound of a car, some other sound. It might be an itch. It might be a thought. It might be a feeling. It might be a body sensation. It could be anything, any of the senses, anything in the mind. And what you might find is that, for example, you might have a thought that arises effortlessly, and then you notice that you get involved in it, which is effort. Effortlessly get involved. And then a moment later, there's a loud sound outside, and you kind of, oh, now that's effortless. And then you notice there's a little attempt to try to stay with the sound, to figure out what it is, which is making the effort. But then luckily, there's a little ache in your knee that bubbles up effortlessly. And so that bubbles up effortlessly. Just go with the flow of what's effortless. Now, one of the reasons why this can be a very useful practice is that, to some degree, if you're in a noisy place, you'll be mostly aware of a lot of noise, you know, external noise. But generally, attention is not a neutral phenomenon. Or to say it differently, that what bubbles up into awareness has a lot to do with our inner life, with our interest, our priorities, our values, our fears, our desires, a lot of different things. So, you know, I've noticed, for example, that I would drive around a lot for years and never noticed any couch stores. And then when I got interested in buying a couch, I was surprised how many of them there were. You know, I effortlessly become aware of so many couches stores. And somehow I was interested, so I would pick it up in my environment in the way I hadn't before. So, if you hear sounds a lot, meditating, I'm not saying this is the case for probably most of you, any of you here, but it could be, for example, that it isn't just a neutral arising of sounds. There's a certain value you have in those sounds. Perhaps you're meditating at home and you're afraid of burglars. You're hypersensitive to sound because of burglars. Or maybe your lover's coming over, so you're hypersensitive to any sounds because, you know, something great's going to happen. And there is, you know, some kind of valuation, selection process the mind is involved in. As we sit and do this effortless awareness, it allows what needs to bubble up to reveal itself or show itself to us. So there might be some kind of inner feelings, emotions, beliefs, thoughts, understandings, processes that are timely for us to deal with and work with. But if we're always busy and looking at what, busy, it doesn't have a chance to surface. If we do the effortless thing, then the inner wisdom of our body, our psyche, knows when to show, reveal what we need to deal with. It's a little bit, that sounds a little bit hokey. But there's a way in which this kind of practicing of staying with what comes to awareness effortlessly can involve a great trust that there's a natural process which will unfold and take care of you in your spiritual life by itself. And one of the reasons why I can say this is that what comes into awareness is where the effort and energy is. And so if you sit down to meditate after you've, robbed the bank, what you're going to become effortlessly aware of is how agitated you are and afraid you are, perhaps. It's going to be effortless because that's a lot of energy there. You settle that down. Well, let's not use that example anymore. But, some other agitation, you settle the agitation down because that's the big thing. Then you might become aware that you have a certain preoccupation about a meeting that's going to happen tomorrow. There's a lot of energy there. That comes effortlessly to awareness. And that settles down, and then you become aware that you have this lingering stress, tension in your forehead. And so then you become aware of that, and you hold that in awareness for a while. And then you become aware effortlessly, when that falls away perhaps, that something more subtle, of maybe there's some concern about self-image, that there's energy there about self-image that's there. What I'm describing is going from coarse or a lot of energy, a lot of effort, and slowly through meditation you discover where there's less and less. But what reveals itself to us is where the effort and the energy is most. And so as we trust the effortless unfolding of things, what's showing itself is tends to show ourselves. It's going to give yourself enough time, over on the average or overall, what tends to show itself is where the most energy in the system is, where the most effort in the system is. And as we hold that in awareness, it can unravel, it can dissolve, it can heal, it can grow, whatever it needs to do. And then the beautiful thing that happens in meditation is you get calmer and calmer and calmer. You start becoming aware of subtler, more sublime, or more subtle places of effort and energy that are usually not aware of when we're living a coarse, energetic life. And the very subtle places doesn't mean that it's inconsequential. It's often the most consequential place, or the kind of the fundamental operating principles of our life are often very, very subtle. And so as we get calm, as we deal with the kind of what's effortlessly there, slowly, effortlessly, we come down to a very deep place in our minds. And we can kind of deal with that as well. And in the process of doing this, one of the qualities that can grow, which I think is really beautiful, is trust. A certain degree of trust or confidence in this natural unfolding. And to be able to have that trust and that confidence allows a person to have a very different relationship to their life if they don't have that trust and that confidence. If they don't have the trust and the confidence, then it's all about doing and accomplishing and protecting and all kinds of other stuff. So I'll end with this poem by a Tibetan teacher named Lama Gendun Rinpoche. Happiness cannot be found through great effort and willpower, but is already there in relaxation and letting go. Don't strain yourself. There is nothing to do. Whatever arises in the mind has no importance at all because it has no reality whatsoever. Don't become attached to it. Don't pass judgment. Let the game happen on its own, springing up and falling back without changing anything. And all will vanish and reappear without end. Only our searching for happiness prevents us from seeing it. It is like a rainbow which you run after without ever catching it. Although it does not exist, it has always been there and accompanies you every second. Don't believe in the reality of good and bad experiences. They are like rainbows. Wanting to grasp the ungraspable, you exhaust yourself in vain. As soon as you relax this grasping, space is there, open, inviting, and comfortable. So make use of it. All is yours already. Don't search any further. Don't go into the inextricable jungle looking for the elephant who is already quietly at home. Nothing to do, nothing to force, nothing to want, and everything happens by itself. So you might experiment in your meditation perhaps, or also in your daily life. If you're sitting, you have a moment, idle moments, waiting at the checkout counter for your turn, or sitting waiting for the red light to turn green, or probably lots of little moments in daily life. See if you can settle back and rest in the awareness of what comes to you effortlessly. And see what that does to you. So, thank you very much.